The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Ho, ho, ho. There he is, the left-hand side of the screen on our YouTube channel here on Tony Curry Radio. It's Kip Kiefer. I am Tony Curry. This is the Kiefer and Curry Show. You can hear it at least 5 days a week on the TKR app. That app is free. It takes you like 3 seconds. Just put in TKR and through Android or Apple and to check it out. And, of course, wherever you get your favorite podcast, you can check us out, of course, right now on the YouTube channel. So you can actually watch these big, beautiful faces that have been doing radio and television for nearly 100 years. We got it going on, brother. We got faces for radio, but we do have some mugs for television as well. So that's what we're on our YouTube channel. So welcome to our YouTube channel. We do a show every single week. Kip and I, we have talked about movies. We've talked about television shows. We've talked about politics. We've talked about religion. We've talked about relationships. That we had a very interesting show about a couple weeks ago. You can go back and archive all of our shows. They're available on all of our YouTube channels, wherever you get your Tony Curry Radio podcast. But we obviously have a lot of equity in sports. You've been doing Paramutual. You've been doing the Birmingham Racecourse Casino. You've been involved in sports your entire life. I have as well, probably more so in the latter part of my career than the early part for the last 20 years. And so I wanted to throw out an idea today because there's something happening in sports right now that I think is pretty amazing. And you were there for the NHL Las Vegas Knights, their first Stanley Cup. And it was their second appearance, but it was their first Stanley Cup win, which is pretty amazing stuff.
In year six, you're right.
In year six, and it's pretty doggone quick. Then we're looking at the NFL playoffs this weekend where the Lions, the only NFC team never to even play in a Super Bowl, the Browns, the Jags, and the Texas team, obviously all three of those squads have been to a Super Bowl, but they have not won a Super Bowl. So we're going to have, and it's amazing because all four of those teams are in the playoffs. So something's going to have to break water here. Someone's going to do something they haven't done in a long period of time. So I thought that was really interesting. The Lions are getting back to the Super Bowl or to a Super Bowl for the first time. I thought that was interesting. In Major League Baseball last season, you had the Texas Rangers win the first World Series ever for that franchise, which I thought was amazing. And by the way, Colorado, Milwaukee, San Diego, you also have the Rays, Seattle, that other baseball team that's never even played in a World Series. And then, of course, the NBA this past year. Who won the NBA championship for the first time ever? The Nuggets. We got a bunch of lot of first timers here in our four major sports arenas, the NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, and NHL. And by the way, 10 teams, Brooklyn, I can go through the list real quick. Clippers, Memphis, Minnesota, New Orleans, Phoenix, Utah, a lot of teams in the NBA have never sniffed an NBA championship. And I'm just wondering, since we've gotten, and you can make an argument, say like over the last 4 or 5 years, we finally had a 16-1. I'm trying to think of some other sports analogies or sports comparisons I can make. We were always looking for parity in our sports. We always want to make sure that everyone that's part of the sport is actually involved in it from a championship level, that you have an opportunity. That's why everyone loves opening day of Major League Baseball, because everyone's at 0-0. Everyone's, everyone's got a shot, you know? But is there anything special going on? I'm starting to burn some wood up in my brain here. Is there anything special going on in the world of professional or collegiate sports that I'm missing, that while all of a sudden all of these first timers are cropping up and winning championships in the respective sports, or is it just pure, it's just happening?
Well, I think there's a lot of factors in play here. To mention a couple of the examples you gave, the Lions, for instance, it's not like, Tony, they were an expansion team in 1989 and have never won. Mm-hmm. The Detroit Lions have been around since the beginnings of the NFL. They may not have been called the Lions, but the city of Detroit has had a franchise that is the Lions all the way back to the beginning of the 20th century. So their run of futility is comparable to the long droughts of, in baseball, the Red Sox and Cubs, who both finally slayed that demon in recent years. But at least those teams had actually appeared and won a championship. The Lions have never even been to the championship game, the Super Bowl, the NFL championship game, let alone win one. So they are quite the remarkable story. But again, this is not a Johnny come lately team. You can understand expansion teams that just got into the league, the process taking some time. You mentioned the Texas Rangers. People may not realize the Texas Rangers. And I fully realize it because the year I was born was the year that the Washington Senators were formed. Coming into the American League, the previous Senators had moved to Minnesota about 7 or 8 years before. So you had the Washington Senators as early as 1960, going all the way up to just last year before they finally broke through. I think that the simplest answer to that question is, why is it happening now? I think if a franchise is in place for so long and they make so many changes, there's always a different coach and there's always a different personnel department and different people in the management roles, eventually you are going to catch some lightning in the bottle and get it right. And I mean, it's just the do theory. That sounds awfully easy to say, but the Lions
coming from a gambler. That's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. But the Lions wallowing around, you know, since the 1890s, finally getting a chance to compete for a Super Bowl. And they're, and let's face it, they're a pretty significant underdog this week. So they're a long way from living the dream of actually appearing, because they've got a big hurdle in San Francisco. Although much to our chagrin last week, we both had the 49ers and they didn't play like the 49ers. So who knows what's going to happen, but I think that's part of it. And also, Tony, the freedom of movement for players. I mean, all these leagues are designed where the worst teams get the highest draft picks, get to restock their team through that. Again, if your management's inept and doesn't get it right, if you don't have the right coach, Dan Campbell in Detroit has pushed just the right buttons. The Lions have really kind of arrived at a juncture that nobody expected. But I think there's enough attrition where you keep getting those picks and you keep stockpiling those guys. And things happen. They get hurt. The team doesn't turn it around. But I think the way sports is structured, this is how it's supposed to work. And in some cases, it just seems like it takes forever for it to all fall into place. But when it does, it's pretty remarkable, and everybody's attention is riveted on those stories.
I know you're a purist, and we've talked about, you know, I love the fact that Barry Larkin played his entire career with the Cincinnati Reds and those days are over. And certainly in the NBA now, you know, if you had one superstar player, you had a shot. If you had two, it was over. Now you can have at least three, because the max contracts and the money is just absolutely huge. But you like the idea that the free agencies really played into the idea that a Jared Goff can leave one team and go to another and play Matthew Stafford. I mean, I'm one of those guys. You mentioned the Detroit Lions. It's a crying shame that Barry Sanders never sniffed a championship run. It's sad that Charles Barkley went to Phoenix to get that run and never happened. It's a shame that Karl Malone was with the Utah Jazz, but there was this guy named Michael Jordan who wasn't going to allow the Utah Jazz, who probably should have won a couple of championships in their own back pockets, but didn't do it because of the Chicago Bulls. But I mean, so you like the idea that some of these guys get an opportunity to actually leave those teams, because I'm all about loyalty, and I realize there's no loyalty in sports at all, but the fact that you can leave teams now and go play, and maybe because of that, let's be honest here, you got the Clippers, you got the Dallas Mavericks, you got some of these teams, I'm just thinking the NBA off the top of my head, you know, where if you got the money, you got the firepower, you can go out there and build yourself a championship team. I remember the Florida Marlins doing it when they first got into Major League Baseball, and a lot of people had an issue with it, because I think the year after they won the World Series, they won like 60 games. And
sold everybody off.
Yeah, a lot of people had a big time issue with that, and I was one of them. I'm like, this is not right. I like building that equity and building those teams, particularly in professional sports, because, you know, in college, they're going to leave. But I like when you build that championship, and then within 3 or 4 years, you know, I'm seeing that with Detroit. We saw that towards the end of the 2021 season, 2022. Then the last year, of course, I think they had lost six games by 3 or 4 less points. This was going to be a good football team, and now they're built into it. But it's almost invariably an idea that, you know, once you win a championship, what are you going to do? You're going to tear it down. Is that something we can expect?
Yeah, and this is nothing new. I can bring to your attention the Philadelphia Athletics, who were the American League team in Philadelphia.
Yes.
All the way back to the turn of the century. Of course, they've eventually moved to Kansas City and became the Kansas City A's, and ultimately landed in Oakland. And now they're on the move again. In 3 years, they're scheduled to open as the Las Vegas A's. They're already cleared the land and are building a multi-million dollar or multi-million, probably billion. Million. $1 million yeah. stadium, dome stadium on the strip. I feel like the guy in Dr. Evil there, you know, $1 million ransom, and everybody laughed at him. Yeah. I am a relic. But anyway, but the A's are going to be on the move again. But Connie Mack was the longtime manager, famous baseball figure, the longtime manager for 40 years of the Philadelphia A's. They won a couple of championships, but Connie Mack had another distinction, Tony. He was also the owner of the team. Mm-hmm. And Connie Mack's philosophy was, I don't want our team to be too good because then I won't be able to keep the players I have. They'll all be demanding trades. Now, they didn't have freedom of movement. Baseball for years was protected from players leaving, even if their contract was up. If you couldn't come to terms with your current team, you couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
They had that clause that didn't permit any movement. That changed when a guy named Kurt Flood and his agent Marvin Miller shook up baseball and sports forever by taking away the long-held reserve clause where you were property of that team forever unless that team wanted to move you. And Kurt Flood challenged that, and the Supreme Court, after a long battle and it really kind of ruined Kurt Flood's career because that was lingering for 3 or 4 years, and the pressure on him being kind of the guy trying to break the rules that had been long held. But that was the beginning of free agency and player movement. So, but Connie Mack didn't want his teams to be too good because he felt like that all of them would want a lot more money and he couldn't keep the team together. So he wanted to win just enough games to make sure attendance was good and people had hope. And a couple of years, he had such good teams that he really put the pedal to the metal and won games, but knew that he would have a 4 or 5 year rebuilding plan after that. That's how he ran his franchise that he actually owned for 40 years. So this is nothing new.
This is a pretty amazing thing too, because we always think the rich get richer. And while money is certainly a big part of major league sports, the fact that we do have so many more first timers, and I know everyone says, well, if I'm a small market team, if I'm a Green Bay, or if I'm a Cincinnati squad, you know, from a mid-major market, I'm never going to play. But actually, because of that money, they do have the opportunity to be competitive. I would say that as opposed to like an LA Dodgers or a squad that can just, or the Yankees that can just continually pour millions and millions and millions of dollars into every single year to make sure they have the best roster to take place on opening day or whatever that be in your sports, it's much more difficult to get that lightning in a bottle for a mid or smaller market major. And the other thing is, and I think you bring something really interesting about Connie Mack, is I was trying to figure out why. Was there some type of comparison between what we're going through right now in sports? And the only thing I could think of was ownership. I think is a lot different now. You mentioned Connie Mack than it used to be. I think ownership, and you can kind of throw in the Mark Cubans of the world and the Jerry Jones for sure. You never heard from the owners. Hell, most of us didn't even know who the owners were. If I asked you who the owners of the Kansas City Royals was in 1973, you would have no clue.
Now, you and Kaufman, I happen to know that.
See, you go. And everyone knows now because these are players and they're correct characters and they do like to get social media. And then, you know, again, the money aspect of it. And it almost feels like if you're in right now, you have an opportunity to win a championship. I can't think of any. And again, you know, when you're talking about the NHL, it's got 11 different teams that haven't won a championship, and the NBA 10, which is a lot. You're talking basically a third of the entire sports arena there not getting a chance to win a championship. And, you know, after a period of time, if you're in a league for 30 or 40 years and you're never sniffing a championship, you get to the point where you're never going to win. Why do you keep playing? And the answer is the money. You know, you talk about, and the Bengals have just been so, so good at doing this for years. They never cared about winning a championship. All they want to do is sell out Sundays. They wanted blackout Sundays, man. That's all they care about is blackout Sundays. That family and everyone knows who I'm talking about, the Brown family, they have done that for years and years and years. As long as they got a full house, they couldn't care if you go 0-16. Obviously, by winning football games, you can have a better shot at selling those games out and you can sell more merchandise. And they're seeing that now. But that was a team every single year. It seemed like the Bengals got a first-round draft pick or a first overall round draft pick. It seemed like they got one for like 13, 14 years in a row. And you knew 2 years into the contract, they were going to let him go because they weren't going to keep that player because it was going to cost too much. Now, all of a sudden, we're seeing them pony up that money. But I think because there is so much more money in sports right now and so much more than there was even 10 years ago. I think it's giving these smaller guys and more parity in all the sports.
Yeah, I think so. It just is kind of an evolutionary thing where franchises that perennially lose and don't gain any ground and become hapless and kind of labeled, that they're just the ultimate losers. It's like anything in life. If even in your career pursuits or something that you're passionate about, if you keep running into brick walls and keep failing, if you learn a little something every time it happens, eventually you start making some better decisions, some correct decisions. And I think it's that way in sports. If you keep hiring the same kind of guys that are not dynamic and don't have different ideas, and all of these, and from a coaching standpoint, I think we talked about it on my radio show on Sunday, the morning after, you finally kind of figure out that it's not just the head coach, but you've got to give him the flexibility to bring in an absolute dynamite staff. Mm-hmm. Arguably, we look at Nick Saban, who's recently left Alabama. And I know we're talking about pro sports here, but it's a great example of the model. Nick Saban came in and said, okay, what can we do here to give ourselves the edge in this competitive environment? And Nick Saban started hiring something that nobody's ever done in college football and don't really do much in pro sports. He started hiring an army of consultants, mm-hmm. of experts in all different areas of nutrition and practice habits and experts on particular play calling and defensive scheming and special teams ideas. Nick Saban built the first corporate franchise. Yep. And it's amazing that was in a college program. He completely changed the complexion of the game and gave himself an edge that nobody else had. Now
he brought psychologists in, for gosh sakes. He brought he's got psychologists in to talk to.
He does. Yeah, he's got experts in every field that would enhance a player's performance. And it was such a unique approach. And for pro sports to be slow to embrace that. When Nick Saban came on board in 2007, that is really recent. And that's, yep. to me, if you think about it now, logically, what a natural step to say, okay, what are we not doing that we could do to give our team an edge? And I think a lot of teams have learned that. Look at the NFL, and it may not be a direct attributable to Saban, but they've gone that way too. Now at the end of the season, when all the players gather and are getting their assessment and they're running their 40s and lifting weights and showing off, the big part of those gatherings, Tony, is sitting down with a player, giving them psychological tests, mm-hmm. Having heart-to-heart interviews about what their views on everything are. They're trying to learn who these people are before they draft them. And I think a lot of these modern techniques has helped a lot in team building. You don't just look at a guy's stats. You look at the totality of the person and what he can bring to your franchise, almost like you do in a corporate situation. And I think that has really kind of leveled the playing field a little bit because teams are getting better and better at doing that.
There's nothing better than seeing a team like Brooklyn try to build a championship team and it absolutely falls on their face. We've seen the Dodgers do it. There's nothing better when someone spends $400 or $500 million on a squad and they're hands down knockout. They're supposed to be the best team in Major League Baseball or NBA or anything else. And they just don't show up. It goes to show that, listen, you need to have some chemistry. You need to have some leadership. It bothers me to an extent that a Durant could just take a couple of years off and go to Golden State. And they know they stay healthy. He's going to win a championship. I wish we could have done that for Charles Barkley. I wish we could have done that for Dan Marino, giving them chances to taste that gold on his World Series and his national championship rings. But it does go to show too that through ownership, and you could talk about Beanball, you could talk about Moneyball, we have had to get a lot smarter about what it takes to win championships. You can spend the most money, it doesn't mean you're going to be buying or winning a championship every single year in your respective sport. And I love that, because if it did, then you would have the rich just eating the poor every single baseball season or whatever you play. And so I love the fact that that is the story. That is the beautiful story. That is the wonderful story about Detroit, which is really considered a top 10 marketed team. It's a big market team. They should have money. Yeah. I know there's a lot of disparity there from a social economic standpoint. But to see them finally get as close as they are right now for a franchise that's been around so long, I think it's just great for the sport. And it's just a great, great storyline for what's going on for the Detroit Lions right now, and really for everybody. I mean, I'm not everyone gets a trophy guy. I'm not. Maybe at the age of three or four, they should get a trophy for competing. I'm not saying that everyone should get a trophy, but I do think it's good for any respected sport when everyone's got a shot. And you know, you were talking about the Oakland A's. That was one of the most difficult things to watch this year because everyone knew that baseball team was going to absolutely suck before the season started. I mean, there was no chance in hell they were going to win 80 games this year. I mean, I think they won like four or five games in a row at one point. And everyone thought it was the best thing they'd ever seen in Major League Baseball. And that's really unfortunate when you go into it. If you're going into a rebuilding season, you're going into a season like this is going to be an off year, but we're building up when you're showing your fan base, hey, through free agency and through draft picks and through, you know, saving some money on this contract, we're actually going to be able to build something up in 2 or 3 years. That's something to be said. But when you don't have that light at the end of the tunnel and say, listen, it's going to be an off year, we don't know when it's going to turn around, that sucks as a fan.
Oh, it's awful. I'll tell you a quick story. A couple of years ago, I have a friend in Atlanta named Steve Hardy, who's just a huge all Atlanta sports guy, loves the Georgia Bulldogs, Braves, Falcons, Hawks, which that's another story. The Hawks moved to Atlanta in 1967, Tony, just 1 year off winning an NBA championship in St. Louis. The Hawks in however many years that is, now almost 60 years, have never even been to the NBA Finals since amazing. They've been in Atlanta. That's terrible. But anyway, the Braves a few years ago, after winning all those divisions, they went through that rebuild. They brought up all their young guys. They had a couple of miserable seasons. In the second season of that run, right at the trading deadline, they moved a couple of their best players. And I got a text from my friend Steve Hardy, and he says, Kiefer, what are the Braves doing? They're giving away the only good players they have. And I said, Hardy, you've got to understand. For the Braves, this is a throwaway season. This is a season to just build for the future. They were getting ready to move to the new ballpark out in Marietta. And they were just kind of mailing it in that year, and they moved players because they weren't going anywhere, and they were going to get prospects and pitching arms back that have paid off now with a world championship and a couple of years of domination. But that's what they were building. And when I said, Hardy, the thing about the throwaway season, I got a hilarious text back. He goes, throwaway season with a bunch of question marks. He goes, and he calls himself Hardball, Steve Hardy. He says, Hardball doesn't have that many seasons left.
That's a great story.
So think about those long-suffering Red Sox fans who it was over 100 years between pennants. Tony, they were literally just diehard Red Sox fans that didn't ever live to see a championship. They watched that team for 75 or 80 years and went to the next level without a championship. That's just hard to imagine that you can become regimented to that kind of futility. But there was always the hope and optimism, and somehow they kept that alive in fans. And when they finally did win it, the reaction of a lot of Boston fans, if you recall, was, I don't even know what to do. I don't even know what to say. This has been something that I've, in my entire lifetime, I've never experienced. So it's really a fascinating dynamic, but I just think there's a lot of factors now that allows teams to kind of rise up from the ashes and actually be competitive.
You're watching the Kiefer and Curry Show here on TKR, and of course, wherever you watch and hear your podcasts are available on every major industry. And of course, our television show on ABC 3340 every Saturday morning from 10:30 to 11 o'clock. You can check us out throughout 2024. Before we got re-signed, the breaking news a couple weeks ago. So the Kiefer and Curry Show, it's called The Starting Lineup. It's going to be a great show again this Saturday morning from 10:30 to 11 o'clock. So check us out. And we're going to get into all kinds of really cool things. So make sure you get rid of that. And Super Bowl 58, which is going to be coming up in Las Vegas on February 11th. A lot of talk about that as well. Let me ask you this, and I do want to close out on something a little different that you and I haven't discussed. As a fan, if you're a Yankees fan, or a Dodgers fan, I can make an argument. Let's just say a major market fan. Let's say a major market that's got a pretty good ownership that's willing to spend some money on your team. You pretty much have something to look forward to every season, regardless of what that season is, Major League Baseball, NFL, whatever. As opposed to say, like myself, a Cincinnati Reds fan who, quite frankly, from year to year, I don't have a clue what we're going to get. Last year was just a remarkable year because I think I had them over 64.5 on their win total, and they went way past that. And so it turned out to mean the manager got raises. They kept some baseball players. Hell, they were one of those baseball teams where at the All-Star break, they were talking about making some moves on the free agency market to try to win the division, which was, they were picked to lose like 100-something games. As a fan, is it? And I can't speak this because I have never lived in a major, major market. Not like a Yankees, but from a fan standpoint, but you know a lot of people who have. Is it funner to go into every season knowing that you should be competing for a national title, or is it, say, from a collegiate standpoint, let's go football? Alabama is expected to win a college championship every year. They've won one every 2 or 3 years since Nick Saban's been there. But what makes this year so cool was to see what Washington did, to see what TCU did last season, to see those sparkling moments. And I know people get tired of the SEC, and I know they're tired of seeing Alabama. And listen, as a fan, people right now are going, you're an idiot. Of course, we love playing for a championship every single year. But there is something to be said about fan bases that haven't tasted that glory in a long period of time. You mentioned the Cubs and the Boston Red Sox, and just what a great story that was.
Yeah, and those are the things that are always going to be remembered. You don't remember that the Dodgers with this ridiculous payroll, or last year, Steve Cohen bought the New York Mets, and Tony, he brought in all kinds of huge money guys. They were the co-favorite to win it all, and they were end up 40 games under 500. They were an absolute disaster. But, you know, to answer your major market question, when you're in that position, and even Alabama fans can identify with this, you get to the point where if you don't win the championship, the season's a failure. Mm-hmm. And that's not pressure that I want. If you go out to any of the sports books in Las Vegas, and sometimes I don't even play, I just like to go sit there and watch the games in that environment and listen to people that got bets on the games or fans. Yeah. There's always, wherever you go, Florida, Las Vegas, places, you know, that they're always Yankee fans. Always. If the Yankees are playing an afternoon game, half the sports book is filled with Yankee fans, and every play that goes against them, everything they fail to execute as far as moving runners up or doing the basics in baseball, these people just go into these tirades because they feel so entitled, and every game is so pressure filled that they feel like every time the Yankees lose a game in May, they're out of it. You know, and how can this happen? We're supposed to win it all. The Dodgers have bought unbelievable, and now even more with Ohtani, who I think I figured out is going to be making something like $16,000 per game this year. Yeah. Just chew on that for just a minute. Playing in 182 games in the major league season, it's getting out of hand. But all that does is give the fan base such expectations that even if you make the playoffs and get eliminated, and in sports you still play the games. It doesn't matter what the payroll is. It doesn't matter who the players are. If you get a guy who pitches an exceptional game, or a running back that just gets in a groove and breaks a couple long runs, your team can beat themselves with mistakes or by great performances by other people. So, as a fan, I don't think I would be very happy to be in those situations where my team is expected to win. And if they don't, it's just a total failure. I've wasted 7 or 8 months of my time.
Yeah. I want to see what Alabama's fan base looks like in about 10 years. I really, because obviously we've been going through 16, 17 years of Nick Saban, and we knew that there was going to be competitive. You weren't going to lose two games of all. You weren't going to lose the two games in a year. It wasn't going to happen. And there was a good shot you were going to go undefeated or lose one and play for a national title. And if you go to anybody, whether it's Ohio State, Michigan, Washington, TCU, anyone else, and say, listen, over the next 10 years, you're going to win a national championship, a lot of fan bases would take that. If I went to Washington and said, you're going to win a national championship between now and 2034, maybe not for a Michigan, maybe because they're tasting it right now. If you had told them 20 years ago, they would have taken it. I mean, you tell anybody you're going to win a national championship between now and the next 10 years, there's no one that would have taken it. You say that to an Alabama fan right now, they would give you a face of grief, because if they're not winning 3 or 4, because they're used to winning every 2 or 3 years, just be ready for, because I mean, I'm not saying, and I think the tectonic plates of college football have changed so much. And I think the conference realignment is going to play large into that. I think you're going to have a lot of big dogs, a lot of dinosaurs. It's going to be Kong versus Godzilla every single weekend. I think it's going to be a lot more difficult. You're going to have more teams vying for those championships. But you're also going to have a lot more competition. I think it's, you know, you're looking at Alabama fans saying you're going to win one more championship between now and 2030.
Yeah,
that'd be a really interesting Twitter question. What do you think people would say? Would they go, oh, are you kidding me? That sucks. Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I like on our show the other day, caller said, you know, Alabama was patient when Saban came in. It took him 3 years to win a championship. So I feel like the Alabama fan base is going to give Kalen DeBoer at least 3 years to get it together. And as soon as that guy hung up, John Saber, our producer, goes, isn't that cute? That guy thinks Alabama fans are going to be patient for 3 years. He goes, if he loses the coin flip in the Georgia game on September 28th, they're going to be already trying to run him off.
There's no doubt. Hey, I wanted to ask you a question real quick. And we didn't talk about this before the show, but I wanted to throw it out there because it is topical and it's brand new news. And it just broke yesterday. Sports Illustrated. It's just announced that they're going to be laying off at least 100 of their writers, editors, Sports Illustrated. Of course, obviously, their photography has been just unbelievable, i.e. Illustrated. And they're saying it could be the death of that magazine. It's been around for over 70 years. I used to always read Sports Illustrated. It was something that I
couldn't wait till it came in the mail.
It was unbelievable. And of course, then when you're talking about the swimsuit issue, which I couldn't even tell you when that thing started, I want to say it was 20 years ago. It was probably 40.
Yeah, it was.
And how that kind of took it to a different level. Because it got so many mainstream and obviously people that wanted to see skin, their subscription rate went up threefold when they came up. They're smart enough to know. And then so much so that even ESPN, the magazine, did the same thing. And of course, a lot of people thought it was just soft porn. Your thoughts on Sports Illustrated, what it meant to you in your life. It reminds me a little bit of Playboy, and I'm only meaning that from a brand standpoint, not from a skin standpoint. It's just amazing to me that this magazine has been around my entire life, and I no longer will be able to pick up Sports Illustrated on my rack at my favorite Publix. And I'm wondering myself, is that really happening? Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm not stunned now because I've been out of the Sports Illustrated universe for quite a few years. I heard somebody talking about it this morning in the media and saying, you know, that Sports Illustrated went woke and alienated a lot of their core fans. That wasn't it for me. For me, it's just they got away from what they fulfilled for so many people in my generation, is that you knew your Sports Illustrated was supposed to get there on Wednesday or Thursday. I was at the mailbox a lot of weeks waiting for the mailman to pull up because I had such anticipation. If I'd watched a game, that the week before, that was really that had some remarkable things or had some real relevant situations or some things that I just wanted more information about, because you really didn't have the information outlets you had now. Yep. And as you mentioned, the photography was so spectacular.
Unbelievable.
They put you into those events, even though they'd already been played. And reading Rick Riley and some of the legendary writers they had who could just capture the whole feel and the whole significance of those moments. I mean, as a 12, 13 year old, that was like the center of my universe. Sports Illustrated was just everything. And of course, when the swimsuit issue started coming out for a teenage boy, that was a big deal because you really didn't have access unless somebody's dad had a stash somewhere of seeing those kind of magazines. But you know, and that wasn't, you know, not to indicate that that these women were completely unclothed in these, but they were scantily clad. And that's something that was just a remarkable sign of the times. So Sports Illustrated just had so many iconic things. I think with the advent of SportsCenter and numerous channels dedicated to other sports, I think you can get that same sensation now of being transformed into those events just by subscribing to the right cable package or the right streaming or satellite. I think that was probably the bigger blow that relegated Sports Illustrated and magazines in general to kind of the back pages, no pun intended. And but it's still very much regret when I heard that announcement today. Just the memories of what Sports Illustrated meant to me, and that my development in my knowledge of sports, my love of sports, and my appreciation for great performances. I was completely sucked in. I know it's a long answer. I'll just wrap it up with this. Yeah. Sports Illustrated did a piece on a phenom pitcher the Mets were developing named Sid Finch. Mm-hmm. This was about, I don't know, 1978, 79.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah, they were bringing up this phenom who could throw at 120 miles an hour and had the wickedest breaking ball. He was going to just rewrite the whole mm-hmm. record book. But it was this long article talking about all of his oddities and all the things he was demanding and would he ever pan out? And it turned out to be just a fictional piece just to get people buzzing and talking. But a lot of people didn't even realize it at the time. I realized it was kind of a parody, you know, maybe three quarters of the way into the article that they started making claims that were just nonsensical. But Sports Illustrated was the most discussed piece of literature in the whole country among the sports community. And with the advent of so many information outlets now, sports talk radio, Herb Winches, one of the great pioneers here in Birmingham of that, and others that started that industry, all of the television channels, Sports Illustrated kind of became irrelevant because you had instant access. You didn't have to wait till the mailbox and the mailman came on Thursday.
Sports Illustrated's first swimsuit issue, 1964.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That was even like, before I thought.
2 years before I was born. I don't remember.
Yeah, if I was checking that out at 4 years old, that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and Tyra Banks, because they just went through some of these. Tyra Banks, the first black model to appear on the cover in 1996. Yep. Olympic diver Ann Peterson became the first athlete to be featured mm-hmm. in the swimsuit issue in 1970. I don't remember. I do not remember the SI swimsuit issue being as big as it was back then. Obviously, maybe because I wasn't looking at those types of things when I was, well, probably I was when I was 8 or 9.
Well, your dad was taking it away from you from what you've told me, if you were.
I was going straight to my brother's underwear drawer, not my own. I wasn't looking at the SIs. I was looking at the Playboys. I was going straight for the good stuff.
Well, I'm jealous you had a big brother because my brother was 6 years younger than me, so he was no help.
I remember the first time he accidentally put it in my drawer instead of his own, and I found it in there. I was like, what is this doing in here? And
excellent. Of course, you know,
as the golden child, I had to tell my mother, and it got erased. It raised the ire to my family. My brother just beat the hell out of me after that happened, probably for good reasons. Like, this is the last time I put it in the wrong drawer. So yeah, just interesting. We knew this was happening. I think it's been really interesting to see how the Wall Street Journals and the Playboys and the SIs and some of these magazines, that we do like to look at and read, once the internet came into play, how they were going to play into that, how they were going to say, really, the Birmingham News and the Birmingham Post Herald. I mean, when I first got here, they used to switch back and forth. You had the mm-hmm. news in the morning and the Post Herald in the afternoon. That would switch every couple of years. And I would buy both and I would go through it for information. And I'll never forget, I say 10 years, it was probably 20 years ago, but I remember Christmas Eve, I think, fell on a Thursday and Christmas fell on a Friday, and they came out with the Christmas Eve edition on Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
And I'm thinking to myself, and they had the Christmas Eve edition and the Christmas edition on the same news rack for a newspaper. And I thought, well, how's this going to work? Because it's a newspaper. I mean, it's hard to believe that we used to actually get our news from a newspaper. We used to
think incredible. What a different world. And we've been here to watch it evolve to what it is now.
Something so sexy. And listen, my dad worked, and I'd love to do a show on this someday. My dad worked for the Cincinnati Enquirer. So we had access to the Cincinnati Enquirer. And I remember my fingers, you know, being black with the ink after every Sunday after church. I get in there and just start ripping the newspaper apart, you know, through the comics and the sports and looking at the box scores. Oh man, the box scores.
That was heavenly.
It was just the smell of the newspaper was just so good. But I mean, man, I remember sitting in my living room and hearing the newspaper hit the driveway. And I can remember it was like hearing your phone ring now when your phone buzzes. Yeah. It gets you a little excited, or hearing a slot machine go off of the BRCC. You know, it would just be a little jolt of, oh my gosh. And you get to run out there. And if your newspaper was late or they missed you, It was one of the worst days of the week.
It was terrible.
It was like you didn't know what the hell was going on for the day.
I'm totally cut off from society here.
You know what? Maybe those were good days. It was like forgetting to take your cell phone to work. That's going to happen to you. And it's like, it wasn't such a bad day. Didn't have my phone with me today. Not such a bad day. So,
yep. Amazing.
All right. Great stuff. ABC 3340 again on Saturday mornings. And we're always looking for different ideas to do. We're going to have a special guest on that show. We're going to be talking about the National Football League, the Super Bowl coming up on the 11th. Lots of hoops. We'll be talking a lot of sports. We'll be talking a lot of other things, though, as well. So make sure you continue to check us out here. And, of course, do so right here on the TKR app. He is Kip Kiefer. I'm Tony Curry. It is starting over. It is the starting lineup. And it starts every single week right here on the TKR app and wherever you get your favorite podcast.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.